Chapter 15. He leaned over Vice's chair, and the secretary handed him a letter. "Here's rather an exceptional one, lady, evidently. I thought you might want to answer it yourself." "Exceptional?" Benton ran over the mauve pages and tossed them down. "Why, my dear man, I get hundreds like that. You'll have to be pretty short with her, or she'll send her photograph." He clapped Vice on the shoulder and turned away, humming a tune. "Stay to luncheon," he called back gaily from the threshold. After luncheon, Vice insisted on showing a few of his answers to the first batch of letters. If I've struck the note, I won't bother you again," he urged, and Benton groaningly consented. "My dear fellow, they're beautiful, too beautiful. I'll be let in for a correspondence with every one of these people." Vice, at this, meditated for a while above a blank sheet. "All right, how's this?" he said, after another interval of rapid writing. Benton glanced over the page. "Be by George, by George. Won't she see it?" he exulted, between fear and rapture. "It's wonderful how little people see," said Vice reassuringly. The letters continued to pour in for several weeks after the appearance of abundance. For 5 or 6 blissful days, Benton did not even have his mail brought to him, trusting to Vice to single out his personal correspondence, and to deal with the rest according to their agreement. During those days he luxuriated in a sense of wild and lawless freedom. Then, gradually, he began to feel the need of fresh restraints to break, and learned that the zest of liberty lies in the escape from specific obligations. At first he was conscious only of a vague hunger, but in time the craving resolved into a shame-faced desire to see his letters. "After all, I hated them, only because I had to answer them," and he told Vice carelessly that he wished all his letters submitted to him before the secretary answered them. At first he pushed aside those beginning : "I have just laid down abundance after a third reading," or : "Every day for the last month I have been telephoning my bookseller to know when your novel would be out." But little by little the freshness of his interest revived, and even this stereotyped homage began to arrest his eye. At last a day came when he read all the letters, from the first word to the last, as he had done when "Items and Faggots" appeared. It was really a pleasure to read them, now that he was relieved of the burden of replying. His new relation to his correspondence had the glow of a love affair unchilled by the contingency of marriage. One day it struck him that the letters were coming in more slowly and in smaller numbers. Certainly there had been more of a rush when "Diadems and Faggots" came out. Benton began to wonder if Vice were exercising an unauthorized discrimination and keeping back the communications he deemed least important. This sudden conjecture carried the novelist straight to his library, where he found Vice bending over the writing table with his usual inscrutable pale smile. But once there, Benton hardly knew how to frame his question, and blundered into an inquiry for a missing invitation. "There's a note, a personal note I ought to have had this morning. Sure you haven't kept it back by mistake among the others?" Vice laid down his pen. "The others? But I never keep back any." Benton had foreseen the answer. "And not even the worst twaddle about my book?" he suggested lightly, pushing the papers about. "Nothing. I understood you wanted to go over them all first." "Well, perhaps it's safer," Benton conceded, as if the idea were new to him. With an embarrassed hand he continued to turn over the letters at Vice's elbow. "Those are yesterday's," said the secretary. "Here are today's," he added, pointing to a meager trio. "H'M only these?" Benton took them and looked them over lingeringly. I don't see what the deuce that chap means about the first part of abundance certainly justifying the title, do you?" Vice was silent, and the novelist continued irritably damn cheek, "his writing, if he doesn't like the book. Who cares what he thinks about it, anyhow?" and his morning ride was embittered by the discovery that it was unexpectedly disagreeable to have Weiss read any letters which did not express unqualified praise of his books. He began to fancy there was a latent rancor, a kind of baffled sneer, under Weiss's manner, and he decided to return to the practice of having his mail brought straight to his room. In that way he could edit the letters before his secretary saw them. Weiss made no comment on the change, and Benton was reduced to wondering whether his imperturbable composure were the mask of complete indifference, or of a watchful jealousy. The latter view being more agreeable to his employer's self-esteem, the next step was to conclude that Weiss had not forgotten the episode of the lifted lamp, and would naturally take a vindictive joy in any unfavorable judgments passed on his rival's work. This did not simplify the situation, for there was no denying that unfavorable criticisms preponderated in Benton's correspondence. Abundance was neither meeting with the unrestricted welcome of items and faggots, nor enjoying the alternative of an animated controversy. It was simply found dull, and its reader said, so in language not too tactfully tempered by regretful comparisons with its predecessor. To withhold unfavorable comments from Weiss was, therefore, to make it appear that correspondence about the book had died out, and its author, mindful of his unguarded predictions, found this even more embarrassing. The simplest solution would be to get rid of Weiss, and to this end Benton began to address his energies. One evening, finding himself unexpectedly disengaged, he asked Weiss to dine. It had occurred to him that, in the course of an after-dinner chat, he might delicately hint his feeling that the work he had offered his friend was unworthy so accomplished a hand. Weiss surprised him by a momentary hesitation. I may not have time to dress. Benton stared. What's the odds? We'll dine here, and as late as you like. Weiss thanked him, and appeared, punctually at 8, in all the shabbiness of his daily wear. He looked paler and more shyly truculent than usual, and Benton, from the height of his florid stature, said to himself, with the sudden professional instinct for type colon he might be an agent of something, a chap who carries deadly secrets. Weiss, it was to appear, did carry a deadly secret, but one less perilous to society than to himself. He was simply poor, inexcusably, irremediably poor. Everything failed him, had always failed him. Whatever he put his hand to went to bits. This was the confession that, reluctantly, yet with a kind of white-lipped bravado, he flung at Benton in answer to the latter's tentative suggestion that, really, the letter-answering job wasn't worth bothering him with, a thing that any typewriter could do. If you mean you're paying me more than it's worth, I'll take less, Weiss rushed out after a pause. Oh, my dear fellow, Benton protested, flushing. What do you mean, then? Don't I answer the letters as you want them answered? Benton anxiously stroked his silken ankle. Why, you do it beautifully, too beautifully. I mean what I say. The work's not worthy of you. I'm ashamed to ask you, oh, hang shame, Weiss interrupted. Do you know why I said I shouldn't have time to dress tonight? Because I haven't any evening clothes. As a matter of fact, I haven't much, but the clothes I stand in. One thing after another's gone against me, all the infernal ingenuities of chance. It's been a slow Chinese torture, the kind where they keep you alive to have more fun killing you. He straightened himself with a sudden blush. Oh, I'm all right now, getting on capitally. But I'm still walking rather a narrow plank, and if I do your work well enough, if I take your idea, Benton stared into the fire without answering. He knew next to nothing of Weiss's history, of the mischance or mismanagement that had brought him, with his brains and his training, to so unlikely a pass. But a pang of compunction shot through him as he remembered the manuscript of the lifted lamp gathering dust on his table for half a year. Not that it would have made any earthly difference, since he's evidently never been able to get the thing published. But this reflection did not wholly console Benton, and he found it impossible, at the moment, to tell Vice that his services were not needed. 3. During the ensuing weeks, the letters grew fewer and fewer, and Benton foresaw the approach of the fatal day when his secretary, in common decency, would have to say, "I can't draw my pay for doing nothing." What a triumph for Vice! The thought was intolerable, and Benton cursed his weakness in not having dismissed the fellow before such a possibility arose. "If I tell him I've no use for him now, he'll see straight through it, of course. And then, hang it, he looks so poor." This consideration came after the other, but Benton, in rearranging them, put it first, because he thought it looked better there, and also because he immediately perceived its value in justifying a plan of action that was beginning to take shape in his mind. "Poor devil, I'm damned if I don't do it for him," said Benton, sitting down at his desk. 3 or 4 days later, he sent word to Vice that he didn't care to go over the letters any longer, and that they would once more be carried directly to the library. The next time he lounged in, on his way to his morning ride, he found his secretary's pen in active motion. "A lot today," Vice told him cheerfully. His tone irritated Benton. It had the inoptimism of the physician reassuring a discouraged patient. "Oh, Lord, I thought it was almost over," groaned the novelist. "No. They've just got their second wind. Here's one from a Chicago publisher never heard the name offering you 30% on your next novel, with an advance royalty of $20,000. And here's a chap who wants to syndicate it for a bunch of Sunday papers. Big offer too. That's from Ann Arbor. And this one's funny." He held up a small scented sheet to Benton, who made no movement to receive it. "Funny? Why's it funny?" he growled. "Well, it's from a girl, a lady, and she thinks she's the only person who understands abundance as the clue to it. Says she's never seen a book so misrepresented by the critics, ha, ha. That is good." Benton agreed with too loud a laugh. "This one's from a lady, to married woman. Says she's misunderstood, and would like to correspond." "Oh, Lord," said Benton. "What are you looking at?" he added sharply, as Vice continued to bend his blinking gaze on the letters. "I was only thinking I'd never seen such short letters from women. Neither one fills the first page." "Well, what of that?" queried Benton. Vice reflected. "I'd like to meet a woman like that," he said wearily, and Benton laughed again. The letters continued to pour in, and there could be no farther question of dispensing with Vice's services. But one morning, about 3 weeks later, the latter asked for a word with his employer, and Benton, on entering the library, found his secretary with half a dozen documents spread out before him. "What's up?" queried Benton, with a touch of impatience. Vice was attentively scanning the outspread letters. "I don't know. Can't make out." His voice had a faint note of embarrassment. "Do you remember a note signed Hester Macklin that came 3 or 4 weeks ago? Married misunderstood Western Army post wanted to correspond?" Benton seemed to grope among his memories. Then he assented vaguely. "A short note," Vice went on, colon the whole story in half a page. "The shortness struck me so much and the directness that I wrote her. Wrote in my own name, I mean." "In your own name?" Benton stood amazed. Then he broke into a groan. "Good Lord, Vice, you're incorrigible." The secretary pulled his thin mustache with a nervous laugh. "If you mean I'm an ass, you're right. Look here." He held out an envelope stamped with the words colon dead letter office. "My effusion has come back to me marked unknown. ... There's no such person at the address she gave you." Benton seemed for an instant to share his secretary's embarrassment. Then he burst into an uproarious laugh. "Hoax, was it? That's rough on you, old fellow." Vice shrugged his shoulders. "Why, yes. But the interesting question is, why on earth didn't your answer come back to?" "My answer? The official one, the one I wrote in your name. If she's unknown, what's become of that?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.